Collateral.
Collateral.
Collateral. Collateral is a word. It's the word I really struggle to spell.
Oh, yeah?
You know, you just got a big... I'm a good speller, man. I like to think I am anyway.
Well, you're a sub-editor, so pretty important,
I would say. You said that before. I was. That's not my job now.
That's what you were when I met you. So forever to me, you're a sub-editor.
I went through all the... Went through all the emails today, actually, because I was feeling a bit down and I haven't really given them a proper look. And they go back to May.
Well, you were looking for external affirmations, were you?
I was. That's exactly what I was doing.
Right. How did it go?
Well, even the ones that said, oh, I don't like Adam as much. He shouldn't be the host, or he's misused. He said autobiographer when he means biographer.
Just those two?
No, even those two, I thought, I don't mind that. That's like, it's still attention, isn't it?
See me?
Yeah, see me.
Look at me. I am real.
Yeah, I'm a real boy. It was a real little perk up. I had a good old look over the communal list, and then even I added, I think you'd missed some, and then there were some new ones. So I thought I'd just give a little shout out to people who've made their way to the communal list with their great suggestions before we kicked off.
Do you think that's proper. Why they call it Percocet? Because it gives you a perk up, you know? Or do you think that's just a coincidence?
Did Percocet ever really get over to Blighty? I only know it from the movies.
No, I think it's just an American thing, isn't it? Percocet. I don't even know what it does. Is it just a painkiller?
Yeah, maybe one of those bad ones, you know, maybe part of the old opioid crises. I don't know. Percocet, American listeners, email us at moviesyouforgotpodcast. No, email us at moviesyouforgot. Okay, forget
it's
it. Don't
it's
do
P-E-R-C-O-S-E-T.
The time it took me to try and say our email address, Joe's Googled it and already answered the question.
Well, I thought you might want to know that Percocet is a combination medication that's used to help relieve moderate to severe pain. It does contain an opioid pain reliever, oxycodone, and a non-opioid pain reliever. Aspartame.
Oh, hang on a sec.
Acetaminophen.
Here we go. What is aspartame again?
I don't know.
Oh, it's going to make this made up joke even harder to do now.
Aspartame is a low calorie artificial sweetener that's used in many foods and drinks to replace sugar.
What did the person who was trying to go on a diet? No, it's acid because it sounds like ass part time, doesn't it?
And right, that's the punchline. Right.
Yeah. Ass part time.
Yeah.
Email us at moviesyouforgot@gmail.com if you can come up with the joke that has the punchline ass part time.
Well, did you know that aspartame is aspartame is about 200 times sweeter than sugar?
I didn't know that, but now I do.
That's good information for anyone who wants to come up with a joke, though, because, you know, it's like, you don't need sugar, and there people think you're going to say, because I'm sweet enough already. It's like,
yeah.
No, you need aspartame, because you need 200 times as much sweetening as someone, a normal person.
That just sounds like a really horrible thing to say to someone.
Well, you'd only say it to like a someone who reminded you of bitter lemon, you know?
You know what you need? You know what you need, yeah? You're so bitter, you need some aspartame.
Yeah, you need some aspartame. I mean, that's the joke right there. It could work, couldn't it? Because you're so bitter, but you're busy. You can't have ass full time. But if you've got ass part time, you might be less bitter. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, lemon. I like it. Lemons.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what were you saying?
Thanks to Andrew Ward, Lewis Reed, Josh Boothroyd.
Jose Lewis Reed.
No, that's
a great name.
Josh, I'd have said Josh Boothroyd. Lloyd Narja, Lewis or Louis, I'd say Lewis. Lewis Evans. Louis Evans. Joseph Hughes. Michael Wallace asked if we'd discuss less mainstream movies a bit.
Michael Wallace. Get out of here. Listen, this is a podcast where we talk about only Michael Mann films that everyone's seen, okay? You leave it out. If you want, you know, to hear about less mainstream films, then maybe you should go down to your local art cinema and talk to the people that don't want to look at you, you know? Or just check in any number of episodes. I mean, we've done a few, haven't we? Yeah, where was he when we did the Two Faces of January? I bet he didn't listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, because it was off me talking about After Sun. And I think that's how less mainstream he means.
That's like the most mainstream film I could imagine. It might as well be a Marvel movie.
You mention less mainstream movies quite a lot in your ramblings, which I'm less prone to do. So it just made me think I might do that a little bit more.
Sure, sure.
Just do that. But
that's a good idea, because listeners will have come to think of you as sort of like a movie guru. You know, they'll have. I doubt they'll have anyone in their life whose opinion on films they'll respect more than yours. And so if you were to just drop a little bit of crumbs off the plate, I bet they'd gobble them up like the hungry little pigs that they are, you know? Well, they're a truffle. The joke's on them. They're just stale crumbs, not a truffle. But, you know, the pig metaphor still works.
Yeah, lots of really nice emails.
Oh, yeah, that's what you were talking about. Sorry, go on.
Tom someone, last week you mentioned him, and then he said, "Oh, he was gonna write a review, and it must be him because this is the most recent review, 16th of November."
Yeah,
it says Consumer 6747368, 5 stars. Great podcast. Love this podcast. Intelligent, witty, and so relaxing. I don't know about that. I have a slight concern it will be one of those podcasts that just disappears as it doesn't quite fit into any category.
That's true.
Like a long-form chat.
We're the firefly of podcasts. That's what we are.
It's one of the most listenable and gentle podcasts there is. Oh, fantastic.
That's nice.
I've got a fear that it will disappear as well.
Oh, and it so could. It's so could. You know.
Really, really could disappear just like that. But
that's a really nice thing. Really nice. Thanks, Tom, whatever your name is.
Well, I don't know if it is Tom. It's just he'd sent...
Doesn't matter.
Tom had sent... He'd sent a nice email and you read it out. You read it out in the episode...
Did I?
The Gladiator 2 episode.
Oh, yeah. I read a few out, didn't I?
Yeah, and that's why I was feeling so shit, because I listened... I had to edit that one. And you know when you've gone to a party or the pub... And you've had,
yeah,
you've been having fun, and you've had a few drinks. You've had a rum and coke, maybe 4 or 5 rum and cokes, and you think you're like on fire,
the belle of the ball.
You're not just a mousse bouche; you're the full meal, you're the full platter.
I think everyone wants to be around me, and they've had a great time with me.
But then the next day, there's that nagging feeling. You said you maybe weren't actually that entertaining, and if anything, you might have said something that stepped over the line. You remember hazy recollections of people's faces. They weren't necessarily smiling. They were more baffled or concerned.
Yeah.
So in that scenario, you never have the video or audio of that experience. I had that experience. I've had the pleasure of listening back to me
and editing it.
I felt, you know, I'd obviously had too much to drink during it, because you flag it up. And then I had a horrible hangover the next day. It was a real wake-up call in terms of how much... It was the first time I felt like I'd done some out-of-control drinking in a long time.
Right.
I've really had shit locked down. I drink too much, but, you know, small and often. And it was... I felt so shit the next day. Not only because I'd let you down, because I'd been so fucking insufferable
on
the record.
Now. Come on.
No, no, listen, you've had your go. Let me self-flagellate for a bit.
Okay.
So I haven't had a drink all week. I felt pretty good. At the same time, in the evenings, I've had a slight sense of not anxiety, but like, you know, like, what's going on here? What do I usually do?
Yeah, a little tickle in the brain. And
not that I need. I've not been. Oh, I need a drink. I don't. It's been great every single day. I've gone, I'm not going to have a drink today, or like later on in the day, in the evening, in the morning as I get up. But yeah, so it's been a sort of a difficult and troubling, not that troubling, just a bit difficult and annoying. And so then having to, then going back in time and listening back to that version of me, I was just like, oh, fucking hell. It made me remember all those actual times when I was at the party and thinking I was on form and being, and actually not, just being, you know, probably quite boring and difficult and like Mia in Pulp Fiction or whatever.
Right.
So it's sort of swelled up a lot of it's just a bit of like neggy shit in my head. And now it's clean slate time. It's clean slate time.
Good Lord.
I'm drinking, you know, drinking water and eating Watsits to fill the void.
Right.
Instead of drinking three small cans of Camden Hells.
Well, you've got a very clean mouth, you know, not a lot of clicking today.
Thanks. I'll take it.
Do you know, for me, it's not even the next day, though. For me, it's as soon as I've left. And sometimes when I'm there at the party.
As you're saying.
Yeah, if I'm drinking, if I've had a couple of drinks. And I found this, I think this is actually, I've noticed it's only really with people when I drink after work, with colleagues, you know, or in a work environment. I have a drink, have a lovely time, whatever, it's all fine, nothing. And then I leave. And on the tube journey home, I have heightened anxiety and I feel the sensation that something horrible has happened. I've done something really bad and nothing's happened, you know. But I feel this horrible shame that I've done something wrong. So I had a work trip recently and I thought before I went, I'm not going to drink when I'm there. And I didn't. And I didn't feel any shame. And I thought, oh, maybe I just won't drink then. that makes more sense. And guess what? I haven't had that feeling since because I haven't drunk in any of those situations. So it's nice. It's nice that there's a solution to that. But I think everyone listening will know that feeling. You know, it's shame. That's what it is. It's shame. And some of it is appropriate and a lot of it is not.
Yeah, it's tricky. I guess it was... It was filling a void for a certain. So now the void is there.
Yeah, you got to look at it
in myself. I got to look at the void. It felt like as well drinking was there's because it felt I don't have anything that really feels like mine. And I used this in an argument months ago with my wife. I don't have anything that's mine. The one thing that is mine is my time, and it would be say with a pint. And that feels, but then it started that mindset. Just I started mapping it onto like lots of other scenarios, you know. Like, well, this has got, you know, the one thing that could prove this is my time is if I'm having a drink,
is if I'm drunk,
is if I'm a bit buzzed, like another round. And then it's like, well, come on, that can't be. That's like my Dumbo's black feather.
Sure.
I can fly without the black feather, for God's sake.
Yeah, you didn't need the feather. You didn't need it. You thought you did, you know?
Yeah. No, it's more like, what really, really affirms my freedom in this, my sense of self? What's two thumbs up, two fingers up to the world? Oh, I know. It's if I have a drink, this is mine, and this is my choice, and I felt I really needed that signifier.
Yeah,
I'd love a different signifier, or maybe I just don't need a signifier.
Have you tried smoking? Because I find that to be a very good sort of nihilistic, self-destructive thing that does the two fingers up. That, you know, every time I do it, I have a horrible, sickly, conflicted feeling of on the one hand, I feel like, oh, I'm dying. This is the process of me killing myself, you know.
Yeah,
going the same way that my father went. That's what I'm doing. I'm reliving the past. I'm ensuring that the time is circular, you know. And at the same time, I think, hey, this is cool. Fuck everything. Fuck the world. Who cares? You know, I'm going down hot and heavy with a cough.
Well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it?
It really doesn't.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello. I'm never happy with my hello. Hello.
No?
No.
What about hey? Hey.
Hey. Hey, swing bada bada bada, swing bada.
Do you know what no one says on podcasts? They never say hi. No one ever says hi at the beginning of a podcast. It's hello or hey or welcome. You could try out being the guy who says hi. That would be funny.
Okay. Hi, welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. And joining me as ever is a very kind, thoughtful chap. He's my co-host. Some would suggest he's just a secondary host, or he's just the host. He's another host of the show. He's Mr. Joe Devine.
Hi.
Well, you know how I am. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good, man. Pretty good. I just watched a film.
Oh, me too.
Called Collateral.
Oh, okay.
Then I watched. Maybe I'll save it for later. But I did watch When Harry Met Sally for the first time a couple of days ago. Golly gosh! Oof. Hey,
let's save that for pudding, because I feel like you're gonna be pouring lots of scorn everywhere.
Sure, there's a big old mane, a lot of gravy.
Yeah, a thick sour gravy. On today's episode, we are doing. Oh well, I haven't even told you what the show is. You know what the show is. We talk about a movie we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And on today's episode, we are doing the 2004 Michael Mann directed flick Collateral.
Collateral,
a crime thriller.
Yeah.
Let's say it's a crime thriller.
I think that's what it is.
Here's the letterboxed. It's 120 mins. 2 hours. That's 2 hours, guys.
Yep.
And that is too long for a film with the flimsiest of flimsy premises.
Yeah. A lot of time for it to kind of worm itself out of existence, isn't it?
Yeah. Here we go. It started like any other night. Cab driver Max, played by Jamie Foxx, picks up a man who offers him $600 to drive him around. Okay, that man is called Vincent, played by Timothy Cruz. But the promise of easy money sours when Max realizes his fare is an assassin.
Right, yeah.
I don't love that.
The IMDb one's great, man, let me tell you.
Hit me.
A cab driver finds himself the hostage of an engaging contract killer as he makes his rounds from hit to hit during one night in Los Angeles.
Oh.
I mean, that's what the film is. That's much, much better.
That's a sweet, sweet, sweet IMDb. Mm. Also featured is Jada Pinkett Smith.
What the fuck is up with your cat, by the way? That cat is unhappy. I'm hearing it.
He just wants some attention.
Right.
My wife's watching The Bear and I'm recording a podcast. People, like, this was in the early episodes when the cat appeared. They were some of the best moments.
Yeah, texture. But that's because the cat came in occasionally and, you know, it was usually a funny note, as though the cat was somehow prescient and knew that what you were saying needed to be interrupted by a meow.
And that's just constant.
Dennis has been going at it for the last 10 minutes and I'm a little concerned that it's going to continue. Should we try something anyway? What it was, I've been watching this TikTok of a guy who teaches people how to speak cat, quote, you know? And then like lots of supercuts of people trying the noise that he makes, which means something. The one I've seen the most of is him. He says, he goes, meh. Meh, that's the noise, and it means come here. And then there's loads of people who shown doing it to their cat, meh, and then the cat comes. So could you look at Dennis and say meh, and see if the cat comes to you?
He's wandered off now. So.
Oh, but try it when he's around the corner, because he might come back. Might come back in. Let's just see if it. I want to hear it live.
Meh, 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 meh.
Maybe the cat's stupid.
No, so. It also stars Mark. It also features, doesn't really star. It also features Mark Ruffalo as Detective Ray Fanning.
Yeah.
And Javier Bardem pops up.
And Jason Statham.
I mean, it's not a good film.
No.
And I insisted that we do this instead of
a good film.
It was this or
The Descendants.
Right.
Which I think is probably a better film than this.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Michael Mann is a superb director.
Sure.
But you wouldn't necessarily know it.
I'd love a whole Michael Mann section because I want to hear more about him. I think I've only seen, you know, about half of his oeuvre, but I know he's well thought of.
Okay, but so go on, kick in with your kicking for Collateral.
Okay. Well, this is the top line, yeah? Collateral, a film pretending to be deeper than it is. That's the main thing I thought about this film, right? It has a lot of aesthetic involved. It has a lot of... You can see that it's been well considered in some ways. And I, you know, the very beginning of the film, I like how they're trying to set these characters up, and they're telling these little stories, the information that they choose to share, the exchanges, the looks, the whatever. But it almost feels as though it's someone who's like seen a lot of films that do this successfully and then just simulated it. The whole thing feels like a simulation of what might be a good film. And also, I find it very irritating. I think it's extremely shallow, but it pretends to be something other than it is. I wouldn't mind if it was just a shallow crime thriller. That's fine. If I could be excited by the action, if I could believe in any of the stakes, then that would be okay. But trying to sort of weave jazz in as a metaphor, for example, trying to portray Tom Cruise's character Vincent as anything other than just a contract killer, it's very boring to me. Because it's so superficial, it doesn't mean anything, and it's like Tom Cruise, and I'm going to lay it at the door of Tom Cruise because, you know why, but also because he's a huge star and he has a lot of weight in these sorts of films. It's like Tom Cruise has sat down and watched a bunch of crime movies where the bad guy is also a bit like relatable and also has like there's some deep mystery about why they are the way they are. You know, I think about Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men, for example, which I know came after this, so I'm not suggesting that Tom Cruise watched that before he made Collateral. But, you know, a film like that in which the bad guy is at once absolutely horrific and scary, but also there's a deeper mystery to him, which might make him a bit more relatable. It's like Tom Cruise sat down and watched 10 movies that do that really well and then thought, oh yeah, what if like he's a really bad contractor, but what if he likes jazz? Or what if he like actually helps Jamie Foxx's job out somehow by shouting at his boss or something? Like, what if we make him more relatable in that way? And then you just write it down. He might as well have had him in the back of the cab the whole film saying, I'm relatable. I'm mysterious and relatable, instead of saying any real dialogue.
Cruise doesn't have it in this. Absolutely right. But I think it's the script is at fault. The script, the character isn't well written enough. And Jamie Foxx is as well, the taxi driver, is also, he's miscast.
Oh my God.
Totally miscast as someone who is trying to be a striver and be all kind of like this button down guy.
He's miscast as someone who is a good serious actor. Is that what you're trying to say? Because Jamie Foxx is a absolutely terrific comic actor. And I think in a film like Django Unchained, I mean, I absolutely love him in Django Unchained, but that's because he plays it like it's funny, you know, and he's incredible at that. But this guy, no good.
Yeah, no, he can't. Yeah, he can't switch off charisma, and because he just looks like he's out of his element.
There's one moment where he takes his glasses off and then is cool, and that was so funny to me.
I guess the problem with the film is that it is a very silly premise, but Michael Mann he Michael Manns it, and he really wants to give it some heft and make it quite like proper and have man heft.
Yeah.
But you can't, it's fucked, but from the whole premise, it feels like the way it's going to go is that it should be a unlikely partnership whereby the taxi driver is sort of enjoying being with this guy, this violent guy. The taxi driver is a schlub. He's worked his entire life to try and build something. He's got nowhere. And then he meets this guy who plays outside of the rules.
Yeah.
Not just that, he's a killer. And he can, it's like, oh, this is someone who I should, this is the American dream.
This is someone to emulate.
Yeah, I thought I was working hard. This was the American dream. No, the American dream is fuck everyone else, look out for yourself and kill people.
Yeah.
But that's not what the film is. It's just a very, very straight down the line, quite dreary, quite flat, overlong, over serious thing, and it's kind of frustrating and or boring. So let's pull away from that and tell me what other Michael Mann you've seen. And you're not, you know, do you think about Michael Mann in the same way that I think about Michael Mann?
I think it's unlikely that I think about Michael Mann in the same way as you, partly because I haven't seen as many of his films, and I think also because I don't have as much time as you do to masturbate, so I would have thought it just doesn't come up as often. But I've seen the...
I mean, you surely have more... You don't have kids. You've got loads more time to masturbate.
I have so much time. So, and I'm not doing it, you know? It's like, what's happening? I think maybe that's the thing, the difference between you and me. You've got these little windows you have to take advantage of. I've got just like vast stretches of time, and I'm just here, you know, not doing it.
Yeah, you're in a swimming in a sea of choice, and so you don't do anything.
That's
whereas
absolutely
me,
right.
I'm in a puddle of
A puddle of mud. So listen, I know we're probably going to go through. I'm just going to tell you quickly. I'm going to buzz through and tell you which ones I haven't seen and have seen, and then you can come back to the beginning and tell me.
Yeah, I won't interject. Okay? I really won't this time. I will not interject.
Okay, haven't seen Thief. Haven't seen The Keep, although I've heard that's shit. I have seen The Last of the Mohicans and Heat. Haven't seen The Insider or Ali. Of course, I've seen Collateral. That's today. I've seen Miami Vice, Public Enemies. And that's it. I mean, I know he made Ferrari in 2023. I haven't seen that either.
Have you seen Manhunter?
And I haven't seen Manhunter, no. So I think I'm missing more of the important ones than I've collected. But I think Heat's a terrific film. And The Last of the Mohicans is kind of confusing to me. But, you know, I thought it was fine. Pretty long. Bit of a long one.
Not that long. But
I thought it was quite long.
But, quite long.
But Thief is the first big one, right? That's the first biggie. It's his directorial debut in terms of being released in cinemas.
Yeah, it's not that big. It's a cult classic, I'd say.
James Caan, isn't it?
Yeah, James Caan. No, you've seen the big ones, and. This is what I'm,
well, I haven't seen The Insider. I think that's a big one, isn't it?
And I would heartily recommend you watch The Insider.
I will.
That would make you really realize what a phenomenal filmmaker he is.
Right.
Ferrari, I had to try watching that three times before I could get into it and through it. It's quite slow.
That's the one with Adam Driver, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And it's a good film. It really, really builds and builds, and the payoff is this big old-timey race. And he's a great filmmaker. Just sometimes, I think here's the thing. This is what I wanted to get into. Filmmakers where you just want them to make the same film again and again. And with Michael Mann, you just want him to make the equivalent of Heat over and over again.
What a shame you're not a big Wes Anderson fan, because it's all there for you.
Well, you're
Martin Scorsese, you know?
To
a certain extent, Martin Scorsese is making the same film over and over again.
Well, so this is the slight difference is, do you think he is? He's not, because I think, you know, there's just, you haven't seen Age of Innocence is very different. And Killers of the Flower Moon ostensibly might seem like a very Scorsese flick, but it doesn't feel, it compared to Goodfellas, it's not.
I forgot about that film. I totally forgot it existed until you just said it.
Killers?
Yeah.
We're not doing it. The thing is, I think I love Mann because I love crime flicks and Thief, Manhunter, Heat. I rewatched Public Enemies and Miami Vice recently, so I'm fully tuned into lesser mans.
And Miami Vice is 2006, Colin Farrell. Public Enemies 2009, it's Johnny Depp, isn't it?
Yeah, Public Enemies is the story of John Dillinger, a bank robber in the 1920s, I want to say.
Sure.
Played by Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp is massively miscast and is got zero charisma and appeal in it.
I remember it being a bad film.
It's not a bad film. It's very well made. But it's not. It's flawed in that he's just he's a very oily lizard presence,
right?
To spend any time with,
yeah. David Icke's entered the chat,
and Christian Bale is just Christian Baling it up as the guy on his tail.
Is Christian Bale in that film?
Yeah.
Good lord.
Billy Crudup plays J. Edgar Hoover. He's great fun in it.
J. Edgar Hoover, you say?
Yeah.
Wow.
It does feel like it is about something.
Oh, and Jason Clarke's in it as well.
Oh, yeah, your favourite.
I like him.
Yeah, he's good. I much preferred Miami Vice. I remember not really liking that at the cinema, and that's Colin Farrell, Jamie Foxx, playing to type in that as a cool customer. It's pretty slick. It's sexy. Farrell is dirty, sexy, smooth.
Hey, it's got Barry Shebaka Henley in again.
Oh, yeah.
Legend. Man loves Barry.
Man, he does his research. He's very committed and compelling director. He really cares about the stories he makes. He dives into it. He wants to know what he's doing and everything, the craft of it, their films are shot great. The acting tends to be less of a thing in his films, aside from Pacino and De Niro and Heat. He has lots of great character actors, but they're not like showy performance-y type films. They're more muscular.
Yeah.
James Caan in Thief. Thief is about a safecracker. You know, he's got one last job and it all goes wrong. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand. I can't necessarily, it's hard for me to sell Man when I would just say watch Heat. Heat sells Man.
Man's films have been noted for their realism when it comes to the capturing of the sounds of gunfire. he prefers to use raw audio captured from the scene rather than a sound mix. Many of his films feature practical effects to produce the action scenes, with actors attending boot camps for weapons handling and firing full load blanks in scenes to accurately represent the sound of live ammunition. Hey, also, he lived in London for 7 years, where he worked, I think he made some adverts and stuff, alongside contemporaries, including Ridley Scott. That's pretty cool. Nice little hookup there.
Yeah, I guess he's kind of like Ridley Scott, but with class and a brain.
Right.
But he's a lot less prolific than Ridders.
Imagine if Michael Mann had made Gladiator 2.
I think it would have been as unsuccessful.
But it would have been very well lit.
A long time ago, I was in Burma. My friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why steal it?
Well, because he thought it was good sport, because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Why do you say well lit?
Well, because the main thing under his directorial style listed on his Wikipedia page, and it's also the main thing I've been reading about since I watched Collateral. This is the first line in the subcategory directorial style. Mann's trademarks include powerfully lit nighttime scenes. That's the first thing they say about him.
Yeah,
and that I think that's the main thing I found interesting about Collateral, which I can discuss now if you want me to.
Yeah, no, you teed it up. It would seem silly for me to then go, no, Joe, come back to this later when I've talked about something else.
Well, I want to give a nod to a YouTube channel called Watching the Aerial. I watched a video called Collateral and the Death of Neon. It's like a 26-minute video essay. I was just looking for stuff like for inspiration, the things to talk about, because I really didn't enjoy watching the film. I had a sort of, not a negative experience, just a kind of basic neutral experience of absorbing it and thinking the only things I have to say about my experience are probably that I was bored and that I didn't like the film. And I didn't want to come completely unprepared. So I was sort of fishing around for inspiration. I wanted to see what other people liked about it. And I stumbled upon this actually amazing video, which is why I wanted to share the name and the channel. The video is, as I said, it's called The Death of Neon. And the whole thing is basically about lighting. It uses Collateral as a kind of central example, but it also touches on a couple of Hong Kong filmmakers as well. And it talks about the erosion of neon lighting over time. The whole first chapter of this video, Adam, is about street lamps. And this guy talks about street lamps in a way I've never considered before. So back in, you know, in the early days of street lamp, you had these incandescent, is that what they're called? Incandescent bulbs? I think so.
Yeah.
And they created this sort of very nice kind of warm orangey glow. And there was a warmth to them, you know, but they were extremely expensive because you had to keep replacing them all the time because, you know, they burn out like sometimes light bulbs do in your house. The reason these street lamps were important, even though they were expensive, was because prior to that point, obviously filmmakers are filming on film at the time. It's basically impossible to get good shots outside after dark, right? It's just not something that can be done. So obviously today people are making stylistic directorial choices about what they want to show, and there's so much the technology is able to help them make that creative choice, so they have so much freedom in terms of what they want the viewer to see. Back in the day, so much more of it was about practicality, which is why so many of these films were filmed entirely on in studio sets. And if they wanted to recreate nighttime outside, they'd just build an outside inside and they'd change the lighting of it. But at the time, these lights were like too expensive to take around outside. And so for a lot of those like early LA noir films, for example, most of the scenes are just filmed inside. And occasionally when you go outside, you lose all the texture in the background. Everything's kind of out of focus. You do get some like really interesting arty shots, but it's not that feasible to make them, basically. And then in the 70s, what happened was they replaced all of the bulbs with what's called mercury vapor lights. And they were much more efficient and they were a lot more inexpensive for the cities to power, and they broke much less often. But they changed the way that every city looked. They changed it away from that kind of golden orange glow to something that is much more green and blue and cold. And there's that sheen that just completely changed the feeling of being outside at night. And when you and Michael Mann's a kind of perfect example of this, because if you think about a film like Heat, for example, that's the colour of the film. That's what the city feels like. It's cold all of a sudden. You think about Taxi Driver, it's cold, right? It doesn't have that nice orange tint to it. It suddenly has this kind of strange, eerie green feeling that filmmakers today still try to replicate, even though the lights don't show that anymore, because they consider it like a shorthand to recreating that kind of feeling. And I love hearing those things, like that there's a whole visual language which evolved completely accidentally out of practicality, but now, because it's been used for so long, it is a shorthand to a particular type of feeling, of visual expression. And then you talk about Collateral, which was shot during the time of sodium vapor lights. It was also primarily shot in HD, because the cinematographer talks about wanting to see the light pollution in the sky, right? And film and the lower resolution digital just couldn't capture the background stuff, couldn't capture the sky as much. So the reason they primarily shot it in this way, because they wanted to think about, you know, like in a city when there's just all these streetlights and all the lights on everywhere, you look up at the clouds and the bottom of the clouds, the cinematographer described them as being lit like fog, you know? So you have this weird kind of grey, green, blue, orange thing, which made me immediately think about Blade Runner. When they're, you know, when they're on the roof and it's tears in the rain and you look at the sky and it's reflecting all the neon of the city.
Mm. I mean, I think that is pretty interesting. And maybe that is also why Michael Mann hasn't bettered Heat since Heat.
Yeah.
Or that's the thing. And also the films set after Heat aren't set. Actually, Black Hat was, but Black Hat, that's a hacking movie with Chris Hemsworth in. I tried watching it and couldn't, but I think that's set in Tokyo. But yeah, he's not done an LA crime flick, and maybe that's because he doesn't like the light. It doesn't fit his aesthetic.
Mm. Well, it's funny the idea that nowadays they're trying to recapture something that was before. It did make me think of like watching a film, you know, watching Taxi Driver, for example, and then like visiting New York, how different it feels when you're there. I do think a huge part of it is lighting.
The thing with Michael Mann is you kind of just want him to make Heat or a film like Heat again and again. And everything since then is like, oh, it's not quite like Heat. It's not as, maybe partly it's not as good as Heat, but it just doesn't feel like that. And it makes me think about, like, say, a band like Radiohead, when they released Kid A, everyone's like, why can't they just make like the same music that they did with the Bends and an OK Computer? Just keep making the same album again.
Yeah.
And there is that urge, I think, for bands and directors. You're like, don't make it exactly the same, you know, but basically do the same film again.
Mm.
And that Heat is like pinnacle example of that.
Heat is okay computer.
Yes, exactly. Heat is okay computer. I mean, you know why people are like that. And I don't like, I've never liked it. It's like, oh, if you like okay computer, just listen to okay computer. Let Radiohead make all the music that they want and let them express themselves.
Let little Johnny Greenwood go and hit his pots and pans.
I was going to ask you, I was going to give you a list of directors.
Mm, yeah.
And I don't want you to say whether you like the director or not. I just want you to say the film that you would like them to effectively make again and again.
Yeah, what is their OK Computer?
Cool. Do you want to play that game? Is that a fun game?
I do. Can I change it a little bit? My favourite Radiohead album is In Rainbows, though. Can I say what's their In Rainbows, even though the analogy doesn't work?
No, that's fine. I don't mind that. I mean, no, because then it's your... we're not doing favourite.
Oh.
We're doing the film... I mean,
Would I want them to remake over and over again a film of theirs that isn't my favourite? Doesn't make any sense.
But the analogy is about what everyone said at the time, which is
right.
Because the departure of it goes back to OK Computer. That is their defining album. I guess in fact it still is their defining album.
There were people at the time who also said this is too computery. Why don't you make it more like The Bend? You know, there were less of them. Because it was a very popular album. It wasn't quite as wild as Dylan going electric, was it? But they were there, the people that thought The Bends was better. They're still there now. In fact, you find some young people trying to say that they think The Bends is better, which because, you know, as though to set them apart from anyone else. It does set you apart from other people because it's wrong, yeah?
Yeah.
It sets you apart from the people who are right.
It's still in the same wheelhouse as The Bends. They go,
sort of,
they go
yeah.
very well.
Not really.
Whereas Kid A.
Yeah. Kid A's very different, I grant you, yeah. There's a bigger departure. The departure's not as big, but it is a departure, I would argue.
Yeah, but we can...
I'm getting in the weeds. I don't want to be in the weeds.
Yeah, don't...
I've dragged you into the weeds.
Yeah, I'm not interested in your musical weeds.
No.
Like, oh, Joe knows music. He's going to school me and say, actually, it's quite a departure, more than you would think, and I'll explain for why. Yeah, no, do that on a YouTube video and then send it to me.
Right, right.
So I'm going to say... just don't get into the weeds.
Okay.
Don't overthink it.
Yeah.
Don't make it what you're fate. Just don't try. I mean, I
just do exactly what you've said, which is just to say the film of theirs that I want them to remake over and over again.
Yeah. Which, unfortunately, maybe as part of the game, is just the favourite film.
Yeah. I think you've got in the weeds slightly with that bit, but it's fine because I was already there. You came in as well. Don't, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, okay.
But we were both in the weeds a bit.
And incidentally, a further weedy caveat, most of, if not all of these film directors will be men.
Right, right.
And that's not my fault. I'm listing film directors with a decent-sized filmography of, say, more than 10 films.
Okay.
And such is the world that female directors haven't been given so much space and time
sure.
to make so many movies.
Yeah.
If you look at the IMDb's top 25 film directors, all men.
Right, right.
If you look at a list The Guardian did, left-leaning The Guardian, of the best directors of all time, there is one female director in the top 30.
Who is it?
So,
Lynn Ramsey?
Oh, look at him. He knows cinema.
Oh, I know
His
The
name
Guardian.
Is Joe Devine. Yeah. Well, if I know The Guardian, I would have thought they would have crammed in a few more female directors in there.
Sure.
But they didn't.
No.
It was Ramo Cock Cablamo. So here we go. The Coens.
No Country for Old Men. And I actually do want them to just remake that over and over again. That's not even a lie. I do want that.
No, I know. You, that is now implied.
Oh, okay.
Everything
okay.
you say now is what, P.T. Anderson.
No, but sorry, you're saying it's actually implied is like, but what if the parameters here are so narrow that I have to give you an answer, but I might not actually...
Doesn't matter. This is my game and these are the rules. We don't...
P.T. Anderson, yeah?
P.T. Anderson.
I mean, maybe Boogie Nights.
Ooh.
Just because it's fun. You know, I also like There Will Be Blood, obviously. But you know, no one gets their big penis out, and I just want a little bit of fun. You know what I'm saying?
Sir Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. That's quite tough, that one, isn't it?
Not for me.
No? Not tough? Yeah, I mean, yours will just be, like, Interstellar, won't it?
Wrong.
Is yours Memento?
Yeah, it's more like early Nolan it would be. So, yeah, Memento.
Oh, I guess Inception, probably.
Okay.
Ooh. Oh, The Dark Knight, probably.
Really? You don't like comic book movies, though.
Yeah, but that's not really a comic book movie, is it? It's like, I don't want that. No, you're right, I actually don't want that.
I think it is, actually.
In which case, hold on, what I'm going to say instead is I'm going to say Here's two answers.
No.
No, just one. Just one answer.
Game, one answer.
Oppenheimer.
Oh, my God.
If it's the film I want him to make over and over again, like a film like that, then it probably is Oppenheimer, because all the other ones, I like them all, but I don't want to keep seeing stuff like... The one thing I like about Nolan is he bumps along, doesn't he? He bumps around to different sort of areas. And Oppenheimer, I feel like the film Oppenheimer has almost nothing to do with the story. And so if he remade that film over and over again, the story could be so different that it would be fun to watch. Whereas if he was remaking Tenet over and over again, it's just like a complicated sci-fi film, you know? Oppenheimer could be about anything.
Please, yes, please. Mm. Stanley Kubrick.
2001, A Space Odyssey.
Martin Scorsese.
The thing is, I don't really like Goodfellas.
Don't say it then.
But I don't really like Martin Scorsese.
That's not the game.
No, okay. The game is just which film of his I would want to be remade. Silence.
Steven Spielberg.
Jurassic Park.
David Fincher.
I don't know any David Fincher films. What's he done?
Fight Club. Benjamin Button. Social Network. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Do you know what? The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is actually my answer, because that film is so rewatchable. And it's a film I feel like doesn't really exist anymore. Like, where
please
it's,
get me on that.
It's
please
quite,
get me
yeah,
on.
I will. It's quite like big budget. It's got like really great actors in it. But it also, at the same time, it just didn't feel like a big blockbuster, you know? I feel like there's not enough films in that category.
Yeah, but do you know why there isn't anymore? It's because that film...
Didn't make any money. Yeah,
cost a pretty penny and it didn't make any money.
In this hypothetical, I get to decide. So I'm saying
you do, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want a loss-making film which looks really good that nobody else likes apart from me.
I love that reasoning.
Yeah.
You're playing the game. Joe's playing the game.
This is a good game. I like it now. Now I'm into it. I found my way through it. James Cameron. Well, I mean, the game here is which film could I tolerate him remaking over and over again? I mean, I suppose he's already remaking Avatar over and over again, so I'll just say that, because that's been happening anyway, and I've mostly managed to avoid it, you know?
So what, you don't like Aliens or Terminator 2 or Terminator 1?
I didn't know that he directed Terminator or Aliens. I don't really like Aliens. I didn't really like Alien that much either. You could get me on that, by the way, because I only watched it once, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, and I thought, what's everyone on about? Terminator, yes, fine. It's fine. Don't really care. Everyone's like, Terminator 2's great with that kid who looks like Conor Oberst. I'm not really interested in that either. I don't really get everyone's fascination with Sarah Connor. I don't really like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And what was the film I chose? Avatar.
Mm.
My reasoning for Avatar was funnier. I feel nothing about those early films. I think I just don't like James Cameron movies.
Yeah, demonstrably. I'm quite shocked. Darren Aronofsky.
I did watch Pi years ago, probably when I was like 19 years old, and I thought that's quite a good film. But at the same time, I also didn't really like it. Whereas Black Swan, I think that's a terrific film, a very functional film which does everything it's supposed to, a little bit scary, and I'll pick Black Swan.
Good. Okay, two more friends of the podcast.
I kind of never want this game to end. This is nice.
Okay, maybe I'll do two more.
Well,
I'll do two more, and then I'll do two more friends of the podcast. Sam Mendes Nuts.
Oh, Mendes.
It's a tricky business.
It is. Do you know what? It is tricky with Sam Mendes, isn't it? It is tricky. I really liked American Beauty when I was a teenager. Annette Bening is just the best. And whatever she's in, I think, God, this is amazing. But is it, or is it just Annette Bening that's amazing?
Could we do?
So if what we're saying actually is...
Could we do Beauty on this podcast? I've forgotten it. I think I
could get you on it for sure. I think if what we're saying is Sam Mendes remaking a film over and over again that has Annette Bening in it, then I'm on board. Because
no, that's not what he's doing.
Oh,
no.
Okay. What else could I have picked?
Jarhead. It's far more interesting. Jarhead.
Didn't like Jarhead. It was boring.
No, but it looked great. And like it was interesting and funny, and it was a lot. There was actually something going on there. It wasn't so insipid.
But there's no street lamps in the desert, and I'm into street lamps now.
And we will finish with Danny Boyle.
Now, this is a really hard one for me, Adam. This is very hard because 28 Days Later is one of my favourite films. But that's not the game, is it? The game isn't what's your favourite Danny Boyle film that you want him to remake over and over again.
That would be a rubbish game.
That would be a rubbish game.
That would be one of our... It would be listing things, and we got angry emails about that. Don't just list films.
Don't just list films. Because listing, continuing to list, another of my favourites of Boyle, of course, as you know, is The Beach, which we know isn't a good film, and we know it's nowhere near as good as 28 Days Later, but...
Maybe if he made it more times, it would be a less compromised version.
Yeah, I think I want him to remake The Beach over and over again. I think there's one 28 Days Later is enough. I mean, amusingly, they made a second and they're making a third, but one's enough. The Beach, give me more of The Beach, please. And Tilda Swinton can be in all of them. I mean, she would be anyway, whether I gave her permission or not.
Yeah, whether you want to or not.
That was a good game. I liked it.
Yeah, me too. Wes Anderson, Quentin Tarantino, Tony Scott... Michael Bay, M. Night Shyamalan, these are the directors that already do what we're saying. They already make the same movie over right. and over again. So we're fine. And that's not a criticism.
That's interesting.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know, really. I'm a natural glutton for lots of things. A glutton for punishment, I suppose, being one of them. It's amazing to me that I've been doing this job for over 20 years now.
Mark Ruffalo is in Collateral briefly. He pops yeah. up as a slick-haired detective
yeah.
Who kind of gets on the trail of Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise.
I thought he was going to be doing a Hispanic accent the whole time. I was disappointed when he reverted.
Yeah,
to his native Ruffalo, but you know,
I totally forgot he was in this movie. I'm sure you did too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Seeing Ruffalo in this made me think Ruffalo in any film makes it between 15 to 20% better.
Yeah,
everything he's in,
the Philip Seymour Hoffman effect.
Well, exactly, and that's. I think I want to keep this game is going to be more. You know, background, you can't, the person you're going to say has to be, can't be in the movie that much.
Right.
We're not just saying generally, the person in a movie who always makes it better, you know, you could just say, oh, well, I don't know, Robert De Niro. No, we're talking character actors.
Right, okay.
So obviously yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman, Mark yeah. Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Now I've got my list. Have you got any that spring to mind?
J.K. Simmons is one.
Right.
I think he raises the game
yes.
in any film he's in. And until recently, he often was a more of a side actor. I even think about him in, and this is probably the first film I would have really seen him in, as the newspaper editor in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films. He's so funny in that, in those films. He's really great in a larger-than-life character chewing on a cigar. And then obviously, you know, in Whiplash, I think he's... part of the core cast.
Yeah, he can't use that as an example. I'm not
saying that is an example. I'm saying that's the first time that he's like, he graduates from who J.K. Simmons was before to who he is since then. But he's in La La Land as a side character,
In that. Do you have to go to like university for this graduation?
Yeah.
Like, what's the
yeah,
process?
Yeah, that's right. The sophomore year is character actor, and if you're good enough at it, then you get to go to the senior year, which is supporting cast. And if you're good enough at that, you get to graduate the supporting university, and you graduate as a lead, you know, and that's okay. what J.K. Simmons did.
Yeah, okay. Good.
I hope I used the word sophomore correctly there. I still don't yeah. really know what that means.
Me neither.
No. Americans are so strange, aren't they? How about Stephen Root?
Yes.
You know, I feel like people are going to need to Google him to see who he is, but they will know who he is when they Google him.
He's always fantastic when he pops up in a Coen Brothers flick. He's very funny in that film Office Space.
Yeah, he's terrific in that. He's also great. I know this is TV, but he's also great as Barry's manager in Barry, TV series about the assassin.
I will allow that rare mention.
Yeah, because you like it. Yeah.
Barry's great, but also he's fantastic in it.
Sure.
It's just extra heft to the suggestion.
Yeah. Can I have one more?
Yeah. I'll give you, how many have you said?
I've said two. I've probably got two more.
Oh, great. Two more.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Jennifer Coolidge. Stifler's mom.
Yeah. I think now she's like, it's a bit of a mainstream obo choice since with the White Lotus and everyone.
But that's not why I'm choosing her. Just because now everyone else is choosing her doesn't mean I'm not allowed to choose her as a character, as an actor who appears in a film in a smaller part and then raises the quality of the film. Jennifer Coolidge does do that, and she was doing it long before The White Lotus, which incidentally is excellent, and she raises the bar of that tremendously. I'm even thinking about her in like the role she plays in Legally Blonde, for example. You know,
of course
she's
you are.
Terrific in that.
When are you
terrific.
Not?
Yeah, of course, I'm always thinking about Legally Blonde. Flawed movie, but Jennifer Coolidge is great.
Sorry. I really shouldn't have had a go at you for being so
good.
Mainstream.
Thank you. Okay. My last one.
Yep.
I mean, there's so many, but this one's my last one. James Cromwell.
Ooh.
Who is big.
Mm.
And in films such as Babe and Babe 2, Pig in the City, you could say he is a leading cast member.
Yeah.
But more often than not, he is a character actor, and he plays a supporting role, and he always does it brilliantly. And whenever you see him in a film in a role where he's only going to be in it for, you know, 20 minutes or something, you know that film is of sufficient heft that they've hired this guy to do that role, right? He's one of those actors that perfectly sort of fills the gap between budgets. So you say, for example, if he's a lead in the film, it's a smaller budget film and you can't speak for sure about its proficiency. But if he's not like an immediate or leading supporting character in a film, that film's got heft. Whether it's good or not is a different question, but there's a better chance of it being good. Also, I'll slide Alfred Molina in there, but, you know, I'm just sneaking that one in.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Do you want to hear my list?
I'd love to. Who have you got?
Well, I've got women because I'm a supporter of... As am I.
I'll just remind you, when I said Jennifer Coolidge, you tried to say no, and that was the only time you tried to say no, and that's when I mentioned a woman's name. So just to be clear, if one just of us is a supporter clear. Of women, it's probably me.
It is you. Yeah.
But it's okay. I think it's okay for both of us to be supporters of women. I don't think one of us has to not be, but if one of us wasn't, it is you.
Yeah, no. So some of these might maybe have become a bit too big now, but I'd say Marissa Tomei.
I mean, is Marissa Tomei... I don't know.
She
man.
Was, yeah. She is like, maybe. Do you think she's too?
She's too big. I think she's too big. I think the films that she's excellent in now are films like The Wrestler or something, where she's just basically like.
So
you
she's
know,
the supporting. Okay, I take
she's,
it. Okay.
She's full supporting. She's not okay. like the level beneath that.
Joan Cusack.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. She always brings her A game, doesn't she? And I can't think of that many films where she qualifies like in full supporting, even in like School of Rock, for example. You know, she's probably not on screen enough. If that was a serious drama film and she was amazing in it, that she would be on screen enough to just about qualify for a supporting nod. But I think that's still on the edge, isn't it? She's good. You can have her.
Thanks. She's so good in Gross Point Blank.
Yeah, she's great in that.
Fucking fantastic in that. Parker Posey.
I need to look at a picture of Parker Posey. Oh, yeah, Parker Posey. Yeah, I mean, the thing I watched her in most recently was the Crufts film. What is it? The dog one.
Oh, Best in Show.
Best in Show. And unfortunately, Parker Posey and the actor whose name I've forgotten, who she plays opposite, they're the worst characters in the film. So right now...
You're down.
I'm down on Parker Posey right now. But that's just because of my you know, most recent experience. And she was in Thelma, and she was good in Thelma. So I'm going to say, yes, it's good.
I feel like this one's mega, mega. This one's going to be I can't say her anymore. I was going to say, I can't say Frances McDormand, can I?
No, of course not.
Before like Nomadland, you know,
she's the lead in Fargo. Okay. I mean, Fargo's in the 90s.
Okay.
And so, also, she the only films in which she is like in that where she raises the game, apart from the film that we just did recently, which the name of which I've already forgotten. What is it? You know, Cameron Crowe, Almost Famous, which she's...
Hail, Oh, I was going to say Hail Caesar. No, she pops Almost up in Famous. Hail Caesar.
Well, that's the point I was going to make, though. Apart from Almost Famous, I feel like a lot of the films she pops up in are Coen Brothers movies, and that's because I'm not saying she's in them because she's married to one of the Coen Brothers. I'm saying that that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that all Coen Brothers films are always great, and every side actor raises the game. It's not like Philip Seymour Hoffman showing up in the third Mission Impossible film and just lifting the whole thing by 30%, because everyone's on form in a Coen Brothers film. So you can't stand out in that way. Whereas in Almost Famous, there she is. She lifts it just by being Frances McDormand.
I think she always stands out in those early Coen Brothers as extra. But that's a group. I love that point, though. You absolutely fucking destroyed me.
Thanks.
Ben Mendelsohn.
Let me look at Ben Mendelsohn. Australian actor Ben Mendelsohn. Yeah, I'm recognizing this guy. I'm recognizing him. I think he's funny. He's a funny guy, right?
Mm.
He is funny.
He's quite serious. He does.
I'm struggling to recall what he's in.
That helps me.
But I definitely know his face. I don't know if he raises it, though. Does he raise it sufficiently?
Well, for me, he does, yeah.
For you, he does.
Yeah, his appearance is like, oh, here we go. He's a fantastic actor.
Oh, yeah, he's the bad guy in Rogue One, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You can
elevates.
Have him.
Elevates that.
Yeah, you can have him. You can have
okay.
him.
Okay, I'll
off the noggin. One more go.
I can't say he's another Coen Brothers one.
Do it. Say it. Say it.
Well, I was just going to say Michael Stuhlbarg, but he's the lead in A Serious Man. But whenever he pops up as he's rarely.
Oh,
a lead.
He's great. No, he's great. You can have him. He's terrific. Oh, Michael Stuhlbarg. Yeah. Love that guy. People are going to be googling right now on their phones, Michael Stuhlbarg, and then they'll go, yeah, that guy. That guy's a great guy. He's the dad in Call Me By Your Name.
Never seen it.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. Anyway, let's play the box office game. This is going to be interesting, isn't it? Because this is, I would assume you would think, a fairly big movie.
Big movie.
Of course, we know it was released September 17th, 2004. Budget brackets estimated. How much are they spending on this? I mean, it looks nice, doesn't it? It looks nice.
It does, but it's not got loads of action. There's a great car flipping scene. It'd be good if the film ended there.
I mean, it would have been good if the film ended at any number of points.
I reckon it's got Tom Cruise, headline act, Michael Mann, shooting around LA on location, $60 million.
Oh, man. $65 million is what it cost.
Yeah.
You got good at this game. You've got good at this game. Okay, let's try and keep that up now. Because that was in the 10%. And it's rare these days, I would say. Not rare, that's mean. It's not always that you're inside the 10% on budget. And once you're outside the 10% on budget, it's like, well, who cares if you get in the 10% for the rest of the game? But when you're in the 10% on budget, I'm suddenly thinking the stakes are up here. That's one out of three. If we can get two, we're heading for a full flop, you know? So with that in mind, opening weekend, US and Canada, August 8th,
yep.
2004, 10%, bear in mind.
Well, this has got a poster. It's got a star. It's got a premise.
Yeah.
People can go, oh, I know what this is.
People liked the film Taxi Driver.
No.
They're like, this film's also set in a taxi and it's crime.
I don't like the name of it at all.
No, it's a bad name. But I've seen Heat and I'm like, Heat's great. And now if you think like, who's the Pacino and De Niro of this era, 2004? Of course, it's Cruise and Fox. Of course.
Fox isn't big at this point, really, but he's a face.
That was a real joke.
It's in jumper territory. I think we now finally have a film properly in jumper territory.
What's jumper territory again?
20, 25 mil.
Okay.
That's what I like to think. Yeah, I'd love it. I'd love to know if that's the case. I think it's going to make 25, let's say 25 mil.
Oh, it's two for two, Richmond. It's two for two. Now, if you'd said 20,
Oh.
You would have been outside the 10%.
Really?
But as it happens, this film took $24,700,000. So you are... You're so within. I mean, you're within so by within. A factor of nearly 10.
I don't nearly think I've ever 10. Been, never been that close.
No, you haven't. You haven't been that close before. You're just over a percentage point away. So look, this is huge now because it's been a long old time, a dusty long while since you've 3-for-3'd inside the 10% for the box office game. Gross worldwide, gross worldwide. I could sense a loss here because this is the hardest one. I think this is the hardest one for this particular film.
Yeah, I don't think it was particularly well received.
Well, listen,
does Joe's rule of 10 apply? Does it? This Joe, like, his sample size is so bullshit for that.
So small.
It doesn't make sense.
It's almost always accurate
for the films that we pick. It has been. So is it making 242?
Well, listen.
Million.
Listen now. The 10% rule, as you know, is just a guide. It's just a guide to get you started. And then you add in your feelings about it, don't you? Mm. And what you just felt was interesting to me.
I feel like it's not going to get heat on the street. People are going to go and see it and they're not. People are going to, oh, I saw Collateral. And they'll say it to their friend. The friend will go, shall I go and see it? And they'll go, like that.
Sure.
So sure. I don't think it's going to pick up.
Look, the question for you really is it just a minor infringement on the 10% rule, or on the 10x rule, or is it a significant one? And that's the game for you really, isn't it?
That's the game.
Because it could be either.
I feel like it's a significant drop. $170 million.
No, it wasn't a significant drop, Adam.
Oh, no, that's a shame.
You have underestimated the power of Cruise.
I always do, always do.
It was just a tiny little drop. So the 10x rule would have seen it $247 million, and the film took $220 million.
Mm. Okay.
So a little drop there. And to be honest, if you'd actually said 240, you would have been within the 10%. You know, so if you'd taken the 10x rule to heart, you would have been okay.
Well, such is life.
Such is life.
Should we play the game where we try and catch the other one out on a movie they forgot?
I would love to play the game with you.
The stakes for this have never been higher because we're only each of us. This is the bit in the podcast where I read out, or Joe reads out, a list of films. Only five films to try and catch the other one out. Uh-huh. And if one of us doesn't get the other one out, we will have to turn to the very, very healthy and long communal list that has been filled with correspondence.
I forgot about that.
Suggestions. But we can only do it when one of us fucks it up.
It's got to be real, you know?
It's got to be real.
Otherwise, it won't mean anything.
And I'm never going to try and drop the ball just so we can get to the communal list. I need to get this fucker out.
That's true.
I need to plumb this cunt.
Yeah.
So
let's be honest. It'll be nice for the listeners if we get to the, you know, the communal list one day. But also, it will be a failure on one of our behalfs if that happens, right? So there's the stakes are really right there. The listeners get what they want when we fail at doing what we're supposed to do here. And if that's going to be you, so be it, man. But it's not going to be me. I'm not failing before you fail, because that'll be mega embarrassing forever.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you pull my pants down.
Well, so you're going to have to fail first if we're ever going to get to the communal list, because I'm not failing. I'll tell you that now, I'm not failing.
Well, I think you will, because you've come the closest lately.
Well, I just hold my plums back, that's all. Got to hold those plums back. I don't need to golden duck wicket every day.
Right.
But it's your turn this week. It's your turn this week. So come
out. Yeah,
no,
I know. Yeah, right.
Get ready to fail.
Shut your mouth. Fucking hell.
2-for-3.
How many pints have you had?
How many are you going to... I'm living high on Collateral.
Juno.
No, I'm not doing it. You brought it out once before. I didn't want to watch it. I just got bad vibes about it. It's an absolutely fine film. I just don't want to watch it. It is a good forget you forgot. But I'm just saying no.
I'm so glad you told me that thing about the Terminators, because I was going to suggest Terminator 3, but that is coming off my list.
That's one of the ones I've seen more than the others, I would say, because I had it on video.
Yeah.
And it's rubbish.
Yeah, that's why I was going to suggest it.
Right, right.
But I'm not, not.
You can
not,
get me with Alien, by the way. And I'm, you know, listen, I'm not. No, I'm just saying, you can get me with Alien.
Not going to get you with Alien. I would never suggest that. Well, that then, we'll never get to talk about it. Nothing to do with it. Well, yeah, no, not. The only way we're going to talk about Alien is if we do Prometheus.
Yeah, which I don't really want to do. Oh, is that on your list? Is you just saying that to me now?
Yeah, that was a little fun way to go. Prometheus. It's so canon, mate. It's so canon.
It is
plum. Perfect.
It is plum.
It's Ridders. It's get back to Ridley Scott time. It's so perfectly
forgettable. I know. It's plum.
It gets us into Alien.
I know. Fine.
Fassbender.
And I just want to say, I said Prometheus to you weeks ago, months ago.
I know.
And you said no. So you don't. It's not like you get to parade in the victory of plum here.
I'm not going
because,
to.
Fine. I'm just letting you know. I'm just reminding you that
so
you
hurt.
Refused it when I said it. And now it's like you're saying it back to me and acting all cock of the walk, you know. Give me one more.
Closer?
Oh, yes. Big Clive. Return to Clive. I mean, I love Clive. Jude. Natalie, Julia. I mean, I really want to do that, but...
You haven't forgot it, have you?
No, not really. Have you forgot it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to add it to my list. And we'll do it at some point, but it's not a fair plum for me because that's also soundtracked by my favourite Damien Rice record, you know?
And so it is, just like you said it would be. Life goes easy on me most of the time.
What a album that is. Do you know, I distinctly remember my friend, a friend's house, I'll just say friend, when I was a teenager, and that album had come out. And I told her and her mother about it. You know, I told her and her mother about that album. I said I must have been effusively, you know, recommending it. And I went back like the next week, and I remember them both saying to me, "Oh, we bought it and listened to it on your recommendation. It's so depressing." Like they didn't like it. They said it was really depressing. And in my head, I thought, you know, out loud, I was like, "Oh, okay." But in my head, I thought, "Fuck you." And also, I just never felt the same way about either of them ever again, you know. I just
so
like
how old were
how
you
old was I was probably would have been like, you know, 13 something, but I just remember judging them very harshly and thinking, well, you thought that was depressing and you didn't like it, then you're a fucking idiot, an idiot scum beneath me, and I won't ever feel the same way about you again. That's how much I loved that album.
Okay, so that was the Collateral episode.
Collateral.
Yeah, that's it. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.